You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week I will bring you guests that will inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. And I will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and authors sharing valuable stories and helpful information who are working to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound and make this world a better place for all of us. And I'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, our guest today is the author of Happy Woman, Happy World. But don't let that title fool you. This book speaks to both sexes about finding your own rhythm in life. Now, Beata Shalette is a respected speaker, coach, and successful entrepreneur. And having sold her creative company in 2006 to Bill Gates for millions of dollars, she pursued her mission to build a global community of women who will collaborate and support each other. In business and in her personal life, as a single mother, our guest witnessed firsthand how women treat each other, how they sometimes boycott, bully, and backstab other women's careers, and sometimes their personal lives. Now, she is fiercely determined to turn that around by creating a new core code of conduct by which women will live happier, more successful lives, and as the results show, have better relationships with other women and with men. Now, drawing on the tools, hard knocks, and strategy she has learned on her road to success, Shalette founded the Woman's Code, creating programs to improve work-life balance, leadership, and career advancement for entrepreneurs and creatives. Beata, welcome to Answers for the Family.
I'm so excited to be here, Ellen. Thank you for having me.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm thrilled to have you on. And also, I've been enjoying reading the book. And that was one of the things and why I wanted to start this off, because I realized that in our press release, we're talking about Happy Woman, Happy World. And I started reading the book and I realized, you know, this isn't a book that's just for women. This is something to where I think all of us, men and women, can read and gain some valuable information from. So thank you for writing that and for doing what you do.
Thank you so much. Well, that usually happens at about page, I think, 37. That's usually when I get that's when I get the call from the men, and they're like, "But Beata, but this applies for me too. Am I not supposed to read this?" And I said, "No. Of course, the principles are intuitive principles, and they apply to all of us. But I had to focus on one target group, so I focused on women. But of course, I am delighted and thrilled to hear that men read the book and really like it too."
Well, yes. In fact, and for the men out there, it's sort of like having, you know, for those guys that play football, it's sort of like having a little bit of the other team's playbook.
Yes, I guess you can say that. That's a very good way to put it.
So, well, to start off with, again, for those that haven't had the opportunity to either go to the website or to read the book, talk a little bit about, you know, what is the Women's Code that you've put together?
We'll be happy to. So the Women's Code was really born out of my desire when I was working as an entrepreneur, and then after I sold my company, I was exposed to the corporate life because I was hired as the senior director for the company that acquired my business. And I realized on how difficult it was for women to collaborate with each other. And there was all this cattiness and the behind the, you know, back stuff going on. And I couldn't figure out what it was. And then I realized that as an entrepreneur, I really sort of had successfully avoided being part of it. But the more I got my head around it, the more I found that women have a very difficult time to work with each other in a constructive and a collaborative type of way. So I set up the Women's Code because I wanted to create something that really brought a code, and that's why I called it a code to women, because I don't want to raise my finger in anybody's face and I don't want to call anybody out. I just want us to return to our core values. And women, you know, it's time for us to take responsibility for our lives and choose the path that works for us, where we are in charge of our destiny, where we say, this is who I want to be. And I take all the actions that will get me there in comparison to us being sort of in this passive role where things just happen and then we have to react to the circumstances around us. Because I truly believe that we have all the tools, all the opportunities, and everything that we need in our toolbox that we can define and redefine who we are and who we want to be.
Now, before we go into some of the things that people can do to get out of the side that nobody, you know, wants to be caught up in, why do you think this happens? Is there kind of some thoughts that you have as to why this may happen, you know, maybe more so with women than with men?
Yes, and I think there's such a simple explanation to it. I'm surprised that nobody had figured it out prior to this. But when I did my research, Alan, I looked at how men have traditionally worked together and with each other, and the facts are that men, since the very beginning of time, always sought out the strongest guy for their team. I mean, back in the days of hunting, it didn't matter if you liked John and Tim and Scotty, because if Scotty was the fastest and Tim was the best skinner and you had the best strategy, that was the strongest team that was necessary for survival. So men never even thought about on whether or not they liked the other guy. It was a necessity, it was required, and that's just what was done. But in comparison, women were sitting at home, and we were in this passive role ever since, protecting to the best of our abilities what we have, sort of hovering over what was available to us and worried if something would happen that would take it away from us. So very much this is still a lot of this residual behavior that we are still holding on to today, where we are hovering over what we have instead of, you know, opening up and allowing sort of a better collaboration, because we still have this innate, you know, embedded worry that someone's going to come and take something away from us. So we distrust and we rather protect than collaborate.
You know, and I think you bring up a great point, because when you talk about, you know, going back to maybe how men were initially raised or what we initially thought innately, I think we've carried that on, because, you know, I can look back to sports as a child. And one of the things about sports for young boys was you want to pick the team that's going to win. That was the key. So as you said, you're going to pick the fastest, or if it's kickball, the guy that kicks the farthest or catches the best or whatever. And you're right. We didn't think about, well, now I'm going to pick this guy because he's my best friend. We were told the object is to win, and if the object is to win, you pick the people that are going to help your team get to that point. So, I think you bring up a very good point that not only do we have it innately, but then it's reinforced when we're children.
Absolutely. And I had just a very interesting conversation last week during a mixer, and this gentleman who was an athlete when he was in high school and all throughout college, and he said to me he is a father of two girls, and he's coaching women teams now and what a change that was for him. And he said to me that what he remembered from the guy, from the men teams or the boys teams, it was all about, come on, let's win, you know, let's get all pumped up. He says, but women team, girl teams don't play well unless they connect with each other and unless they have a sense of community. So I found that was a very interesting observation, but women really have a need for community. We do way better when we have that feeling of being connected to each other.
And it makes perfect sense. So now share with us a little bit with our audience, you know, how does the Women's Code benefit women in their careers and personal lives kind of at the same time?
Yes. So part of the my story really is that I was very upset when someone told me that I can't do something. I really reject the idea that we fought this hard, or our, you know, foremothers fought this hard to get here, and now I'm still going to run into a whole bunch of limitations. I mean, that just can't be. So I wanted to come up with something that was very clearly giving women the tools to be achieving success in their careers and find a good work-life balance in their personal lives. So basically, the Women's Code is all about strategies and tools, and call this my German background and maybe my need to engineer things. But it is about getting from overwhelmed to awesome, because women can have everything. It's just not all at the same time. So I teach women in its simplest essence on how to compartmentalize. I designed a original concept that I call egorism. And egorism allows women to identify which egorism that they are in, and then based upon that, set a main focus. And then when I know where I am, which rhythm phase I am in, then I can set my main focus to that. And every decision, every choice that I make in my life is then being based up on, is this helpful or hurtful toward my main focus?
Well, I think it's great that you just touched on ego rhythm, because we have a question coming in right now that reads, it says, you know, I read on Alan's site that the words I read the words ego rhythm. It's so intriguing to me that I purchased your book last night. I plan to dive into it next week when my house full of guests leave. But in the meantime, can you describe what ego rhythm means and how you apply this to getting our happiness quotient back in balance? And it's signed, thanks so much, the initials BJ.
I apologize, I have some sirens here in the background, so I hope it's not too disturbing. So basically, egorhythm is, the idea was born when, you know, when I sort of look at a loaf of bread, right? So imagine your life is like this crispy, beautiful, warm bread fresh out of the oven. So I'm very hungry. Now, I could choose to take this bread and shove it in my mouth and take a bite of all sides. That, of course, doesn't make any sense. But what if I were to say I can have this entire loaf of bread by, you know, taking my bread knife and cutting it into slices, and then each of the slices I can have any way I want. One slice in the evening, I may want to dip in olive oil before my glass of wine. One I want in the morning with some butter and some jam. One I want as a sandwich with my, you know, favorite cold cuts. Mm-hmm. So I wanted us as women to be able to enjoy the whole thing, but one bite or one slice at a time. So I've identified 9 egorhythms, and I give you a couple of examples. So there's a mother egorhythm, there's a career egorhythm, there is a tragedy egorhythm because bad stuff happens. There's a health egorhythm, a Zen egorhythm when you need a spiritual connection with God. So I wanted women to really be able to say, I just had a baby. Now I'm in my mom egorhythm. I'm going to enjoy this for the duration of this rhythm because it's my priority. And a rhythm usually lasts for about 3 to 4 years. And instead, what women do sometimes is they have the babies and then they still worry about making their career happen at the same time. And then they still worry about, you know, making their relationship the best relationship possible. and then there's a health issue or there's some other stuff going on, and then the one that want to really dive into their social lives. So women try to have all these rhythms happen at the same time. And when you look at it that way, then you recognize what insanity we've put on ourselves. So why wouldn't we want to enjoy one egorhythm at a time and do that 100%? Because just like, you know, like the loaf of bread or just like a wave, there will be another wave and this slice will be consumed and there'll be another slice.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think it's also important that that's communicated. When you brought up the example about having a baby, I think there's at times there's issues where the woman has the baby and sort of feels guilty that she's going to take away from either the other children or the husband. And as you said, trying to do everything as opposed to communicating to the other children, to the husband, and explaining that, you know, I now have to move into this area and provide, you know, some of the things that are necessary for this young child. I don't want you to feel as though this takes away from you. You know, this is just where I need to be right now. And I think if that's communicated, it's so much easier for everybody in the family to understand what's going on.
And Ellen, I think that the point you just touched on is so spot on, because what I've heard a lot from readers of, you know, of the book is that they say that it gives them the verbiage. It gives them the words to communicate what they've been thinking or feeling all along. And that's, I think, part of why this book is getting such phenomenal review, is because it talks about something that we intuitively know, but we haven't figured out how to talk about it or how to communicate it in such a way that it's not offensive or other people don't get offended by our words, you know, because if I say to someone, look, I don't have time for you, is a whole different story than when I say, this is my priority right now, because, you know, you were that priority then, but this is my priority at this very moment. And I ask you to support that. And I can explain it and I can talk about it in a very sort of normal, non-confrontational way. And it changes everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, like, as I said, I couldn't agree more. I've heard it from many families, where it's caused so much, unhappiness in the sense, because it either wasn't communicated at all. So the woman felt sort of, you know, trapped in trying to do too many things, or as you said, the way that it was communicated was just, I don't have time for that right now. And now you have hurt feelings by a husband or another child that feels like, I'm no longer important, and if they're insecure about that, now we've opened up a whole nother can of worms.
Yes, that's so true. And what I find is that, you know, and I think that's an important point to make as well, the Women's Code really loves and embraces men. I do believe that when we can teach women to reconnect with each other and be supportive, more supportive of each other in this much more open way, that men can stop trying to be our girlfriends, which is what, you're laughing, right? Which a lot of women have been, you know, that's what we've been doing, is we've been forcing men to become our girlfriends because we can trust other women. But if we take that away from men again, that girlfriend thing, then men can be men again. Hallelujah to that. And it will make men so much happier. And we will be happier because then we got our men back.
Yes, you're right. I'm smiling because I love what you're saying. You know, when I mentioned about the fact that, again, for the men out there, that it's sort of like being able to look at the women's playbook, I got that feeling right from the very beginning, and for me, I didn't need to wait till page 31 or 37 or anything else. I got it right from the beginning, because it starts right in with what women want. And, you know, for us as guys, that's huge, you know, because in most cases, you know, we're in love with somebody, we want to please them, we want to know what you want. So share with us a little bit, because I love that that's how the book started off. So share with us a little bit about what your thoughts are on what women want.
Yes. So basically, every woman I have ever met in my entire life wants the same thing in the broad terms. And the broad terms are, we want a relationship that matters. where we understood, where we can communicate, and where we are loved and we love in return. We want a job or, you know, something that makes us happy and gives meaning to our life. And we want to feel good about ourselves, where we are, about our body image, our, you know, and we want to be happy. So that's what all women want. But what I found is when we take the broad strokes away and we ask what each woman wants individually, now it's a whole different ballgame. So the confusion as to what women want comes from us thinking that we are being polite by just saying, I just want to be happy, or I just want us to get along. But what really happens is that we are being confusing, because what we should be doing instead, we should say things like, this is what I need to be happy right now. This is what I want from, you know, this is what you can provide me with. I need 30 minutes this week so I can take the yoga class, or I want you to take the kids for an afternoon on Sunday because I need my girlfriend time. So that when we learn to, as women, to actually identify and specify and talk clearly about what it is that we need and we want and what makes us happy, now we can communicate that. Because women, and I found this the number one miscommunication, Ellen, and I do want to hear what you have to say about this, but one of the biggest issues I run into is that women are nonspecific and they talk in broad terms about sort of what they want and what makes them happy, but it is so nonspecific that men really can't provide any of it because they don't know what it means.
I think you're right. I mean, again, in, you know, is the... In many cases, we were raised as men, I mean, you know, to sort of be fixers. I mean, you know, we feel like our job is to fix something. So if we're told that there's something that's not going right or whatever, we would like it to be more specific because we want to fix it. Now, I know that that isn't always the best thing to do. Sometimes what we should be doing is just listening and not trying to fix it right away. But it's still somewhat innate in many of us that if somebody's unhappy, they're telling us what's wrong, we want to get very specifically what it is so that we can very specifically figure out how to fix it. So, yes, I would agree with that, is that, you know, we feel that that's something we're trying to do that's good, but yet if it's very broad, we might kind of go after the wrong point. You know, if the point was, and I'm trying to think of a good example, but, you know, if the point was that, you know, they're not being treated well, you know, at work, that there's a particular boss, you know, or whatever. And so when we're going, okay, well, you know what, you know, you shouldn't have to listen to that boss. You're really good at what it is that you do. And he's all wrong about that. And then we find out that it was actually more of a general unhappiness with that industry and is now looking to go into another direction. And the fact that we wanted to attack what's wrong about that boss doesn't help.
No, often it backfires.
Yes.
because then the man comes in and he suggests ideas to fix it, and that's the absolute last thing, because you know, and I'm going to tell an example, is that okay?
Please do. I love
okay,
that.
Okay, so in the book, we call it a 93. In Happy Woman, Happy World, we call it a 93 because it is on page 93. So what happened was, during the writing of the book, I had a lot of very, very supportive men. And I don't want to say regularly, but pretty regularly, I had a meltdown because it's a daunting thing to write a book. And so I had one particular intense breakdown. And a friend of mine, Jack Thompson from Minneapolis, he called me just as I was, you know, at the bottom, and I was so upset. And he was listening, and then he hung up the phone, and he called me back the next day. For about 30 minutes, he proceeded to tell me everything that I had done wrong with how I had approached writing the book, how I was going about it, what I probably should have done rather instead, and why everything I had done sort of was wrong. And then there was this really awkward long pause. And then he said, I just made it worse, didn't I? And I was so upset that I couldn't even speak to him. I hung up the phone and I was like, does he think I'm an idiot? You know, I was just having a breakdown. It wasn't, you know, which is sort of a normal thing. Everybody has a breakdown. But what he heard when I complained to him about being stuck with this, with writing the book, is that he needed to go and fix it for me. So what he did, he stayed up half of the night researching on the internet how to write a book, what other people do, and he took all of this great advice that he read on the internet and then told me the next day on what I hadn't done, what other people suggest doing. And when it finally dawned on me that he wanted to help me and not hurt me or tear me down, that's when sort of this big thing clicked for me, that when I am clearer about what I need. So what I should have said to Jack was, listen, I'm having a total breakdown. Can you just give me 20 minutes, 30 minutes off your time? I know it's going to be hard for you to just listen. I don't need fixing. I just need to let it all out. Then he could have provided exactly what I needed. But because I said, I don't know what is going on, and then I just ranted away, he went and became the knight in shining armor, you know, slashing the dragon and finding a solution for me. And that was terrible. It took about 2 weeks to recover from that.
Yes. Well, you know, that is what a lot of us do. And sometimes it takes a few situations like that to realize that isn't what's needed at that particular moment. That might be something that's needed, you know, 2 weeks later when you say, you know what, can you help me and give me some ideas of some things that I can do? That's probably the better time to bring it up, not at the tail end of the meltdown.
So true. So true.
So again, for everybody that's listening, we are talking about the book called Happy Woman, Happy World. If you want to follow along with us, you can go to www.thewomenscode.com or happywomanhappyworld.com. You can open up another window. You can kind of follow along with us. We're going to take a break. We will be right back, but you don't want to miss some of the things that that are really out there for all of us to be able to have a happier world. So stay with us and we'll be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago, to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. We are talking with Beata Shalette. The book is called Happy Woman, Happy World. And for those that know me, they know that I have quoted another one of our guests, Jeff Allen, when I've said sometimes the best way to go is to look at it and say, happy wife, happy life. So So I get it. You know, I wanted to share a little bit that some of our regular listeners know that I read a lot of the books that are given to me while I'm at the gym. So I pedal. So I pedal at the gym. I set the book up in front of me, and many of the people in the gym, because I've been going to the same one now for 25 years, they know me, they know what I'm doing, and they come up and go, "So what are you reading today?" Or, "Who's your guest going to be today?" Or this week. And I had a gentleman that came up this morning, and about 7 o'clock this morning, and looked at what I was reading, and he said, "What is that? Happy Woman, Happy World?" And his question at that point was, he said, "Is that some sort of like a feminist book or something like that?" And, you know, it made me smile, and I said, "No." I said, "But, you know, you might want to check it out because it's actually good for, you know, both men and women. But it does pose the question, what do you think feminism means to you today, and do you think it's still a relevant term?"
I'm so glad you're asking that question, because in the Women's Code, we appreciate everybody's contribution, and we do not throw anybody under the bus. So I think one of the big issues with feminism and why it's become such a bad rep lately is that women, you know, see that feminism wasn't the big answer to everything, and we are not necessarily happier. The numbers suggest the opposite. The numbers say that women are unhappier than they've ever been. So when I look at feminism, I recognized that feminism, the idea of feminism really was to bring women to equality. And our foremothers did that. So if it wasn't for, you know, the Gloria Steinems and the Phyllis Chesslers and everybody who did their part, often at great risks to their home lives or their marriages, or, you know, a society shunned them to a large degree, is if it wasn't for any of them, neither one of us, you know, no woman would have the opportunities that we are having today. So feminism is very relevant, because feminism is the building block, is the foundation on which all women today stand. So do not throw a feminist under the bus. They've paid their dues, and they, you know, and again, you know, I'm very thankful for what they have achieved. What we forget, and this is a woman's thing to do, is what we forget is that when you first start to change the rules or you embark on a new road, you have no idea what's at the end of the road. All you know is there's a new path, right? Uh-huh. When the world was discovered, nobody knew what the other countries were going to look like. They just knew they wanted to find other countries. So that's what feminism was. Feminism was the idea that there had to be something better out there. And we looked at men, and men looked pretty happy in their jobs. They had money. They could call the shots. We wanted to do that. So we set out to do that, and we achieved that. But when we got there, we recognized that our, you know, we still have the babies. We still are the primary caregivers at home. So now we are faced with this conflict of, how do we have a fulfilling career? How do we raise our children? How do we have families? How do we make ourselves personally happy all at the same time? But feminism couldn't understand what that was going to be all about, because it didn't exist when feminism started. It is our job, it's our generation that now takes it to the next level. So when someone asks me, "Are you a feminist?" then I say, "Of course I am. All women are feminists by the pure definition that we have achieved equality."
Exactly. And really, it is just, it's taking what was brought up to this point and now fine tuning it. And one of the things that I love about in your book is you continually come back to the term balance. You know, it's a continuing theme that I kept finding was, you will talk about something that might be beneficial and then come back to the term balance. It's still all about balance, which I think is great. Now we've got another question that's coming in. This one's coming in over the email, and it says, "Our 12-year-old daughter has been running around the house singing the happiness song for weeks, the one that was featured in the Oscars. She points her finger at me, her mother, and says, I never look happy. She then goes on to say, you know, I'm a middle school teacher and have been under a great deal of stress this last year. I'm now asking myself, am I not satisfied with my career any longer, or am I buckling under the pressure of family and just life in general? I admit that that she has flipped my heart around. My question is, I have read so many self-help type books. What makes yours different, and how could it get me back to my happiness place?
Oh, fabulous. I love all of this. First of all, it sometimes does take our children to look at us and put the mirror smack in front of our faces for us to wake up. Number two, when we have this unspecified unhappiness, there's really only two things we can find that can be wrong with our lives. That's our job, or that's our relationship. Because when it's unspecified what makes us be upset, then, you know, the only thing we can figure out is the tangible things that are right in front of us. So don't quit your job quite yet. So what is different about my book, and what was something I thought about when I wrote it, everybody, you know, all of my consultants said, Beata, you're crazy. You can't create an umbrella concept. You have to be specific about one particular issue that's better from the branding perspective, that's better from marketing, that's how we can sell the book better. You know, focus on like the weight, focus on the self-esteem, focus on the career. And the more I thought about it, the less I wanted to do it, because I felt that what really was missing was a book that sort of takes everything that women intuitively already know and puts it together. Call it a permission-based book. I give women permission, or the Women's Code gives women permission to not be perfect. Most likely, if you are unhappy, and you know, and the sweet reader who wrote this fabulous question, it's probably this sense of, I need to be a great mom. My house needs to look good. I want to be a great teacher. I want to be a wonderful wife, a loving wife. I want to have this intimacy. I want to have time for myself. I want to eat healthy. I want to have time to cook. Preferably, my house looks like Martha Stewart's. I cook like Gordon Ramsay. I'm a size zero. Look like Heidi Klum, who had four children. And, you know, I wake up and look like, you know, look like a supermodel. That is called the superhuman paradox. And because we have bought into this notion that we have to be perfect in all areas of our life all at once, of course we are all buckling under the pressure. So what the Women's Code suggests, and this is where this book is different, is that it gives you permission to choose what's most important to you, and it gives you the tools to figure out what's most important to you. And then, you know, with the language that you learn while you read the book, you go, why didn't I think of this earlier? And that's what happens with 99% of everybody who reads the book. You know, I get the call, I get the email, and they said, now you've just given me the ability to talk about it the way I need to talk about it, but I didn't know how to approach it. And that's sort of the biggest goal for me. This is not a preacher book. This is not a guru book. This is not follow this one advice and your life will be, you know, blissfully happy forever. These are real tools, implementable, executable ideas and tools, and you pick. You choose what sounds right and true to you, and that's what you implement. And when you're ready for something else and you want to change your mind, guess what? There's another tool for that.
Well, one of the things that I noticed that you did, and what I was kind of envisioning as I was reading that particular question. First of all, I want to say thank you to those that take the time to send in the questions. I really appreciate it. I know that many of you, or I'm told by some of you that have sent in questions, is they say sometimes in the question, and they'll say, I'm sending this now because I work during the day. I'm not able to listen during the day when it's live, but I'd like this question asked so that I can listen once it's put on iTunes or once it's put on the website, that I can go there and listen afterwards and hear the answers. So again, thank you for that. You know, for giving those questions. It's very helpful. But now coming back to the book, one of the things that I notice is you go into the different pillars, and from that listener, the picture that I got was somebody who was just overwhelmed. Yes. And you sort of touch on that, you know, about midway through the book, you go into the part about where you talk about for those of you that are overwhelmed, and you sort of take them through three different pillars within the woman's code. Can you share a little bit of that for our listeners that might also be feeling overwhelmed?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sitting here with the biggest grin because nothing makes me happier that, you know, I know you read the book because because you know exactly what you already know the answers because you read the book, and that is just the coolest thing to me. So I'll be happy to. So yes, thank you so much for everybody's asking the questions because that really makes everything so much more colorful and so much more applicable. So how to get out of this feeling of overwhelmed. So the Women's Code describes three pillars, and there's, you know, it's sort of a three-step process. And the three pillars are awareness, support, and collaboration. So in the first pillar, what we do is we just take stake of where we are, like what's going on in our lives. Am I overwhelmed? Am I unhappy? Am I stressed out at the job? Am I disappointed, perhaps sad that my child just pointed out that I'm not happy? What are the emotions? What are the items? And just write that down and don't judge it. Don't beat yourself up over it. It's the awareness is just a, where am I at right now? Because you need the awareness to make any changes or to move forward. And that's always where it starts. When you have the awareness of where you are, we move to the second pillar. The second pillar is support. Oftentimes what happens, this feeling of overwhelm comes because we are not supported, or perhaps we are not supporting others well enough so they can in return support us, because support goes, you know, it's like an infinity sign. It goes both ways. So in the support part of the book, you will learn on how to ask for support the right way. And one of the tricks really is to be specific about what it is that you need, and then how to give support instead of offering, you know, to fix things, is to ask other people to help them identify what the different tangible things are that you could do to help them to be, you know, to feel better supported by you. And the third pillar is collaboration. So now we have the awareness. Now we are supported. We know how to ask for support. Now we can support those around us without it draining us. And now we can go to a whole new level of collaboration, because now all this anxiety is out, the communication has been established, and now we can really collaborate on this much deeper and more fulfilling level than, you know, when we talk but nobody's listening.
Yeah, and to add to that, for the guys listening, notice that the second one said support and it didn't say fix.
Very nice, yes. There's no fixed pillar in the Women's Code now.
Yes. You know, and I'm looking at the time, because time is just absolutely flying by, and I also know that you have some really incredible success stories, and anybody that's listened to this show for any time knows that's always my favorite part, which is the success stories. You know, so we've got about 7 minutes or so. I would love for you to share a couple of the Women's Code's success stories for our listeners.
Absolutely. So, you know, part of the Women's Code really is helping women to get the tools and to relax and really enjoy their lives so much more. One of the women that went through the Women's Code online program and was one of the sort of early adapters was a IT woman out in Seattle by the name of Karen, who was just going through a divorce. And she suffered from the superhuman paradox, from perfectionism. And she, you know, she was always answering emails, and she, you know, and she felt like she wasn't good at sort of anything. Her self-image wasn't good. She had gained a little bit of weight. She was going through the divorce. Never a good self-esteem builder. And so once she had sort of adapted these principles of the Women's Code, she sends me this beautiful email, and she says, now what I've learned is I don't answer emails from my home. And I have started to turn off the TV because I figured that the best time for me and my son is by scheduling this and putting it sort of in the calendar. And when it's my son and my time together, we do something. So she has become very conscious about setting sort of a plan in place and then sticking to it, because that's part of getting rid of overwhelmed is scheduling things. So she is, as a result of it, funny enough, what happened, she got a huge promotion at work, and the website that she oversees was voted by a Fortune 100 as one of the best websites, corporate websites out there. So, you know, when she started to de-stress and slow down, that's when everything sort of started to fall into place, which is usually what works. Another great story, which I just love to talk about, is my my client, who then became also a good friend, who had helped her husband to build his business for about 20 years, and then she had this idea of building up a beauty business, where she was advising companies on how to take sort of a medical product and launching it in the beauty market. And she, you know, she has two teenagers, she has a very busy husband, and she's this gorgeous woman, but she was suffering from really low self-esteem. Inexplicable, but for some reason, you know, when you put yourself in service of others, sometimes you forget to take care of yourself. Uh-huh. And now, you know, fast forward, it's 2 years later, she's running a successful business. And when I hear her talk on the phone, you know, I'm like, you know, high-fiving myself, because the whole language has changed and the confidence level is just skyrocketing. Because when you step in and you show up, you know, and that's why I think this intuitive part of this concept works so well, then things just really start falling into place. And there's story after story after story like that. And for me, the most powerful thing is when I hear women tell me that the work I do, or that the book or the concept, they build self-esteem, they're motivational, they help you to figure it out for yourself. And that's what the success story of the Women's Code is. It's real self-help. So you know how to help yourself.
Right. And I think the other part is that in these situations, because I've heard some of the stories and read some of them as well, is that, you know, these success stories are such that it didn't take from anything else. They're still, you know, in their marriage. They're still, you know, having a great relationship with their children. They're still scheduling, you know, happy events and things with their children. And I think that's one of the mistakes that people make, is they think that if I do this, that I'm somehow taking away. And if it's communicated, you're not taking away. You're enhancing all of it. And I think if we can all approach it that way, it's, you know, it's something that works better for everybody involved.
That is so correct. And my goal is not to destroy relationships or have people quit their jobs. My idea is that you get the tools to find more happiness right where you are with what you have, beginning at the end of the day or right after this conversation with you. Because we just forget how easy it sometimes is to find happiness in the little things that we do. And our lives are not bad. It's just that we've forgotten what we need to be happy. And when we remember the little things that make us happy, and then we achieve them and we've identified them as making us happy, then we can actually be happy. And that's what my mission is.
And a great way to wrap this up. Again, Beata, thank you so much. I would love to have you come back on. I'd love to do it where we can go in the studio. I know the reason we couldn't this time was me, because I'm getting ready to fly to Utah. But I'd love to have you come in the studio. There's so much more that I would love to touch on. And before we go, what is next for you? Is there anything new and exciting that you want to share?
Well, you know, I'm definitely out and about and talking. I'm going to be in Seattle live for a book reading. So if any of the listeners are live in Seattle, it's March 27th. So please, you know, connect with me on the website and I'll send you the information. And just check in the event section of thewomenscode.com because I am out and about quite a bit, you know, just promoting and talking about the message. And I'd love to see you live or engaged. So if you want any more information, go to thewomenscode.com. Take the balance test. We have a cool little balance test that shows you if you're in or out of balance and which area of your life. Or check out the book at happywomanhappyworld.com.
Beata, thank you so much. I look forward to having you on again. And for everybody out there, have a wonderful week. Keep bringing as much happiness as you can to your entire family. Take care. Bye now.
My name is Darnell Young, and I'm desperately reaching out for help. In 1970, after a blood transfusion, my mom contracted hepatitis C, which later evolved into terminal liver cancer. A transplant is her only chance of survival, and we don't have the means to fund the surgery. My stepdad's working as much as he can, and I just got off chemotherapy myself, so I've been limited in what I can do. Any amount you could give would help our family more than you can possibly know. You can go to our fundraising website at youcaring.com. That's youcaring.com and search One Family's Battle, onefamily battle, and you can donate directly there. Don't forget to capitalize the first letter of all those words. Thank you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.